Okay, it's March 27th, 1978, and I'm interviewing Jake Riegel at his house in Long Beach, California, and this is the fifth 45-minute tape side that we've made together. And I think when the last one ended, you were talking about working in a shipyard, and you were talking about a little bit about the union. Were there any strikes when you were in the shipyard?
Well, the only thing, there wasn't any real strikes. There's a lot of jurisdictional disputes. The unions in the shipyard were all CIOs, all AFL and craft unions. And the Boilermakers and somebody were having a jurisdictional dispute, Teamsters, I think. And one day at noon, they put up a picket line out there, and the goons went out from the Teamsters, I think it was, great big guys that had working in the plant, and they were the goons working for the out there. They went out there and just kicked the hell out of the guys and threw them in the ditch. And that was all there was to that. But they were always coming around jumping onto you for doing somebody else's work. You didn't have enough people. And I was doing burning and rigging along with pipe fitting because I didn't have any people to do it. And I just didn't want to sit around there.
How did that relate to the jurisdictional dispute?
Well, the jurisdictional disputes between the Teamsters and the Boilermakers was that they claimed they were doing each other, one or the other was infringing on the other's work. And they wanted to get that money for the union, the dues for the union that was having the trouble.
Okay, you said somebody was beaten up and thrown in a ditch, but I'm not sure clear on who it was.
Well, it was either the Teamsters or the Boilermakers. That's the two that were fighting the most. And I can't remember whether the Teamsters got beat up or the Boilermakers got beat up, but I believe it was the Boilermakers.
And that's the only time you can remember any kind of overt...
Other than threatening to fine you and all that stuff, but they used to threaten to fine me for doing rigging and burning and all that kind of stuff, but what the hell could they do? They didn't have anybody to do it, so we had to do it, other than if we didn't want to sit around.
How long did you stay at the shipyard?
Well, you want the exact dates or just approximately about 3 years?
And why did you leave?
Well, I wanted to get out of there before the it got too late to get a decent job outside. And the only way, you couldn't get out without a release to get a job someplace else. They had you froze on the job. And so I had a cold all the time, and my doctor got me out. I went to work for Long Beach Oil and Development, and when I seen who had charge of it, I didn't like him. I'd worked around, he used to have charge of Wood Callahan. No, I didn't think, no, it wasn't Wood Callahan, it was somebody, McCrae. And I worked with a driller that worked for McCrae a lot, worked for this guy a lot, Roy Budget. And I never did like him because he was a lousy guy to work for. So when I found out he was in charge of it, I didn't want to stay there. So they didn't make me take a physical when I went in there. And they put me to work anyway, because it was hard to get experienced oil workers. And when they come around, when I found out who had charge of it, and I wanted to get out of there, I wouldn't go take a physical. So they had to give me a release. That's when I went to work for the Texas company.
What did you mean when you said you wanted to get a good job before it was too late or something?
Well, when the war was over in Europe, I believe. They were still fighting in Japan. And I figured the war was about over in Japan. So if you waited till everybody, till all the shipyards and all the airplane plants and stuff shut down, it'd be hard to get a job. So I wanted to get out and get a decent job before that.
And so you went to LBOD?
Yes.
And then you went to Texaco?
Yes.
What did you hire in the Texaco as, or how did you happen to go to Texaco?
Well, I wanted to, I didn't want to go back to the oil fields because I was married and I'd lived in a suitcase all my life, ever since I'd been big enough to work back there. And I wanted to get someplace where I wouldn't have to travel, like in the drilling department and stuff like that. So I went in the refinery because that would be a steady job there, in one place.
How did you happen to go to Texaco?
I don't know. I just picked out Texaco and I was one of the refineries and went there. As soon as I told them what I'd been doing, well, they didn't give me no, they hired me right off the bat.
And what did you hire in as?
Well, at that time, they didn't hire first-class pipefitters. They couldn't hire them. They had to hire you in as a helper and then set you up. But they were looking for, they knew they were going to expand the plant and there was going to be more pipefitters. So they were hiring anybody that had potential, an experience or potential for a pipefitter. And I was over there about 15 days till I got set up to second class, and then about 30 days I got set up to first class.
And what did you think about working at Texaco?
Well, I don't like working behind the fence and punching a time card because I've never done that too much. I've been, the drilling department was about 3 weeks. But it was a steady job and it was good work and I liked it.
Was there a union?
Yes. That was the CIO, 128.
Did you start going to union meetings or did you have to, was it a closed shop? Did you have to join?
No. It wasn't a closed shop, but I joined the union as soon as I got in there because I dropped out of that, of the 128, and when I went into 599 to work in the shipyards. So I just went, I took a draw card from 599 and went to work and went back in 128.
How come you joined if you didn't have to?
Because I believed in it. They had a union contract. But you didn't have to belong to the union. But they had the majority of people belonged to the union and had a union contract.
Did you feel like the union did a good job for you at Texaco?
Yes.
For example, what did they do?
Well, they got a lot better working conditions, and they got a couple of times we were on strike, and we come out on top both times.
What do you mean you came out on top?
Well, we got a lot more than we would have if we hadn't belonged to the union. We got more wages. We got better working conditions. We got, we didn't get so much better wages. We got about paid on our medical care and sick plan. For every dollar we put up to 6%, they put 50 cents with it and then they'd invest that for you in some certain kinds of stocks, bonds, which was better than wages because when you get your medical care paid, then you don't have to pay income tax on that. If you get a raise in salary, you have to pay income tax on it. They pay, for instance, if your medical care costs you $10 a month and they pay $4 of it, well, that is paid outside of your income tax.
You said you went on strike a couple of times. What was that like?
Well, the first time, I think that was 1942. We couldn't get a they didn't want to sign a contract or give us some of the things. I don't remember just what they were. But somebody, I think there was an admiral that had charge of that division in the government then. I think the Japanese war was still going on. So he said we had to go back to work, something like that, partly, only it was different. So they made us go back to work. But in 1948, when we were on strike, there wasn't anything like that, and we finally come to an agreement. Collective bargaining and went back to work.
Was it a long strike?
Well, it was, I don't remember how long, a month or something like that. Not too long.
Did you Did everybody support the idea of going on strike?
Everybody supported the idea of going on strike. We had a few people that broke the picket line, went back in and got scared. And I didn't know that a bunch of men could stick together like that. I knew that, I didn't think they would stick together there because there's a lot of people that have been there a long time. And when we went back in there, those guys that broke the picket line, nobody talked to them. I mean, nobody. We just gave them the silent treatment. And some of them quit. And some of them, well, one guy, him and another guy had been friends for years, and this guy wouldn't talk to the other guy when he went back in there. And they never talked to each other from then on, as I remember. And I remember one graveyard I was working out there. Didn't have too much seniority, so I used to work out there nights part-time. One of the guys that built the picket line, we eat lunch in this at this pump house where he worked. And nobody had talked to him or anything, and he was just so put out that he broke down and cried one night. He said if he ever had that to do over again, he'd never do that again. Because all the people he knew that worked with for years in the plant wouldn't talk to him. They didn't do nothing to him or nothing. They didn't just wouldn't talk to him. If they asked him anything, they'd talk to him about anything about the job. But other than that, if they said anything else, they wouldn't even ask him, just ignore him. And I couldn't believe that there's many people as he was there that they'd all stick together, and we never had any agreement like that. They just decided that's what they were going to do, and they did it.
Did you go to union meetings and things while the strike was on?
Yeah.
Did you tell that?
Well, I remember one meeting. Well, we used to go there for information and get our picket duty, get lined up for our picket duty and stuff like that. But I remember one time, O.A. Knight came out here. I think that was the 1942 strike when they ordered us back to work. We weren't going to, and they had a big meeting of all the water workers and all the refineries at the old Wilmington Hall. It used to be in Wilmington where we used to have fights and stuff, and O.A. Knight and some of the big shops come out here and talk to us and told us that we should go back to work, so we all went back to work. But at the union meetings during the 1948 strike, you could go there and get, if you needed money or it was hard, or you wouldn't make it, you know, really needed help, you could go there and they'd pay your utility bills and stuff like that. We didn't have too much money in the treasury to pay off, or you could go there and eat. They had a kitchen where they fed people if they needed them.
Yeah, you were talking about big shots. And were there other sort of big shots in the union that you knew through 1.8 over the years?
Well, the ones that I knew that got to be really big shots was O.A. Knight. He got to be president of the International. And Charlie Armand, he was an international rep. He was an international representative, and I think he represented all of Southern California, or maybe all of California, because I know you used to have Bakersfield here, too. Then quite a few of the guys I can't remember their names exactly, but there was two or three fellows that worked in the plant that got elected to something, maybe head of the local here, that got to be international representatives. I can't remember. There's one name in one of those books you had, but I can't remember it right now.
Did you know Glenn Corbett?
I can't remember if I remember. I seem like I should have, but I don't know for sure. I can't recall. I know, I must have known him, but I just can't recall right now. I can't place him.
Well, apparently he was an oil worker.
Well, I think he was with the union. I think, if I remember right, he was president of the local of 128.
Don't you have to be an oil worker to be president of the local union?
Oh, yeah. You're elected. The most of the people that, well, I think all the people that were, they had to belong to the oil workers union in order to qualify to become president. Usually you're working for some oil company. I remember Jack Sayers was working for the Wilshire. He was a stillman for the Wilshire Oil Company when he got elected president of the local. And then we had a guy, a little short, O'Malley. He was, I forgot what he was, but he was an employee of the Shell Oil Company when he got elected. He took a leave of absence when he became the president of the local.
Can you describe the kind of work you did at Texaco?
I was a pipe fitter. We did all kinds of pipe work. And then we did repair work and new work, and then we done overhaul jobs on the units. We had different duties like that. There's an awful lot of pipe work in a refinery, and it's high pressure and high temperature, and you have to do it right or you get in a lot of trouble. First-class pipe fitter has quite a bit of responsibility, especially when I first went there, because they give you a blueprint. If they're going to build a new section someplace, they give me the blueprints, they give me the enough men to do it. I used to have a crew of probably four helpers and three welders and a boilermaker to hang the pipe and a laborer to dig ditches and a carpenter to build scaffolds. And I'd see the foreman once in the morning and once in the afternoon. And then the engineer that had charge of the job, if the blueprints or anything didn't work out right, I'd have to call him at the office and he'd come down and get it straightened out. But when I left there, they changed all that. They didn't have a lot of bosses then. They didn't have a lot of foremen. And then when they got computers and all that stuff, they decided they'd rent it from Houston, Texas or someplace, and they made a lot of foremen. And one pipe fitter and one helper worked together, that's all. You didn't have any more crew than that. And the foreman was supposed to tell you what to do all the time. And the foreman that they set up, they might set an electrician up to be a foreman over pipe fitters, electricians, welders, and everything. Well, when you got out of his field, he couldn't tell you what to do, so it was really an inefficient thing. And the last time I was in there, I told them, man, when they started that thing, I said, you're going to end up, you're not going to have any mechanics that can go out here and run a job. So, when the last time I went in there, one of the area foremen, one of the big foremen over there, all of the people in the maintenance department, told me, he said, you can't believe what it takes to get a job done here. We just don't have any mechanics anymore.
When you worked for Texaco, did you ever work any place except
Wilmington? Yeah, when I was in there, after I'd been in there about a month or so, they had a little refinery up in Fillmore. And they had an explosion in the fire up there and killed a couple of people, so they burnt half the place up, so they wanted somebody to go up there and rebuild the plant. And I'd had outside experience, and all the pipe fitters inside there they went to work for the Texaco, and that's for all they'd ever known, was just the Texaco's way. So when they found out, after I'd worked there for a while, I brought in a lot of things that they hadn't seen or heard of, because I'd learned on the outside. So the superintendent of the pipe department wanted me to go up there, rebuild that plant. And I didn't want to go because I told him the reason I come in the refinery in the first place is so I wouldn't have to live in a suitcase. I've been doing that all my life. But they insisted that I go up there. And so I went up there and I stayed about 3 months and I rebuilt the whole damn plant. All but the instrument. I had all the pipe and everything to them, but I didn't have the instrument set because you couldn't get them. They were hard to get stuff after the war. And they wanted me to stay up there. They didn't have a maintenance man up there. The operators, it was a small outfit, and the operator used to do the overhauling. And I found all kinds of stuff wrong in there. They put the wrong kind of fittings in and all kinds of stuff, and I tore out all that stuff and fixed it. And the manager of the plant wanted me to stay up there as a maintenance man. He said he'd give me foreman's wages. And I didn't want to stay there. I had my home down here, and I had a little business on the side, so I wouldn't stay. I came on back down here and went to work as a pipe there.
Was there a different union up there, or the same union?
Well, when I went up there, they had a company union, some kind of association. And Jack Sayers was president of the 128. So he got a... That was after the 40s. That was after one of the strikes. I don't know which one it was. And they didn't get as much out of it as we did. Because they didn't want an affiliate with the CIO. And they were kind of mad about it. So Jack Sayers, the president of the 128, came up there and they got a meeting together and got them all together. It wasn't working. So they invited me to this meeting. And they talked over whether they wanted to stay with the one union they had or go with the CIO. So some of the guys I was working with, after I didn't say nothing to let them trash it out with Sayers. So they asked me what I thought about it. So I told them, well, all you've got now is a company union. You see what happened to you when we went on strike. You didn't go on strike, but you didn't get the benefits we did either. I said, if you join the union, if you go with this union, then we got a lot more power, and I think you'd be a lot better off. So that's what they got. They went to union with us. They affiliated with, they had a branch up there, but they was affiliated with this department of Texaco down here, 128.
You said you had a business on the side?
I was in the wholesale nursery business.
Could you describe it more specifically that you did?
Well, I bought an acre of land up on 68th Street, and I was growing dichondria and ground covers and selling it on the side. And I was making more money on the side than I could make them if I got to be foreman and had to be transferred someplace else. In fact, they wanted to send me, when I come back from Fillmore, they wanted to set me up for a foreman study and send me to Cameron Hills. They were, at that time, they were starting to put in automatic pump stations and stuff and that kind of stuff and doing away with having a lot of people. And they had a lot of wells and production in Cameron Hills, and the pipelines and stuff was bringing down here and from Fillmore and every different places. But I wouldn't take it because they didn't pay enough money, and I'd have to be away from home, and I couldn't take care of my business on the side here. But if I worked in Texaco in the plant or in state there study, well, I was making more money out of my business than I was the plant.
How could you make more money?